I think there's still dinosaurs living among us. They have not become extinct. I saw a couple of pictures earlier this week. A couple of our children had been swallowed by dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs were going around in the neighborhoods terrorizing people for candy. Thankfully, the dinosaurs spit up the children, allowed them to live, even while attacking the father of one of those children. Did dinosaurs and humans ever coexist in this world? That is not the basic common evolutionary position. Let's see if I know how to use this again. You know, in the old classic cartoons, these folks missed it. That couldn't be right. The creators of the Flintstones missed what evolutionary folks teach, evolutionists teach. And the common line is that dinosaurs lived between 225 million years ago up to about 65 million years ago, and they became extinct for a reason that we're not, cannot be sure of. And that we as the human race have only been around between 1 and 4 million years. And so it's impossible for us to believe that dinosaurs and humans ever coexisted on this earth, according to our evolutionary friends. Imagine yourself on earth 250 million years ago. It's too early to see any dinosaurs. You go forward in time to about 70 million years ago, you listen, you hear giant wings flapping overhead, you see the shape of a huge pterodactyl. Dinosaurs lived so long ago that they never had a chance to know how many kids would love to get a dinosaur to be their pet. That was in our son's second grade class science book when he was in public school east of Atlanta. Our daughter was in kindergarten, and when she was in kindergarten, they were using dinosaurs at the beginning of the school year as a teaching aid. The letters of her name were on dinosaur cutouts. She came home one day and said, "Daddy, my teacher said that dinosaurs were here before we were." I thought, kindergarten? Really? I sent a note back, and her teacher, who was a kind woman, explained that what she meant really was that they were here in Georgia before we were here. Okay, I give her the benefit of the doubt. One year, our kids' class pictures came in a folder made to look like a schoolroom. There are books on the shelf with traditional titles like math, science, history, a dictionary, reading, and dinosaurs, with two dinosaurs as bookends, holding those books up. Yes, that's been some 20, 25 years ago for me, but it stirred my interest in this subject as I began thinking about what does the Bible say about dinosaurs. Stephen Gould, who was a noted evolutionist, a Harvard professor, said that it was the study of dinosaurs at a young age that led him to believe the theory of evolution. A paleontologist, a professor of geology in Wales, an evolutionist, said, "I must admit to being tired of these stupid great beasts. Though they are the best recruiting sergeants for our subject among our young people, including myself." There is an agenda. There is a reason why we continue to hear about dinosaurs. The president of the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology, the former president, an SMU professor, Louis Jacobs, said concerning the co-occurrence of men and dinosaurs that such an association would dispel an earth with vast antiquity. The entire history of creation, including the day of rest, could be accommodated in the 7 biblical days of the Genesis myth. Evolution would be vanquished. And so we are talking about the battle between those who believe in the creation account of Genesis 1 and 2, and as it is talked about throughout the rest of Scripture, and those who believe that God had nothing to do with our existence, including the existence of us here on this earth. So folks, this is an old Athenian gospel sermon. If my cohort and my dear brother back here can preach a lesson on the ear and music, I can do a lesson on dinosaurs. Great lesson, by the way, I listened to it. Amazing how fearfully and wonderfully we have been created by God. This is indeed a lesson for philosophers and researchers. People are looking for new things like they were in the days of Athens in Acts 17. It's a lesson for scientists and paleontologists and archaeologists and et cetera, et cetera. And the challenge today is because Athens is at our fingertips. With the internet, you can read an incredible, obviously, amount of information. And our children, whether they're being taught these things in school, have access to all of these things. And so all of science and philosophies are at our fingertips. I want to say before I proceed much farther that both sides can be in a hurry to prove their position. And I want to be careful. We can present evidence that can be questionable at best. And I have done my best to examine the evidence, to look at some of the attempts to refute them, and the refuting of the those trying to refute them. I will be glad to provide you with links, things that I've studied, books. Some of you have heard these things before. It'll be no surprise, but I think we have a new generation that can be helped by considering these things. And believe me, I am tempted to venture off into evidences for the flood, that's another one, and to talk about the formation of fossils and the fossil evidence. Does it line up with creation or evolution? I remember Gary Fiskus preaching a lesson at 25th Street some 35 years ago after the eruption of Mount St. Helens. Fascinating. Just go online and look at what scientists learned from that remarkable event. And it kind of turned upside down some of the previous ideas about how the earth has come to be as it is. Do dinosaurs really exist? Yes. I heard a person or two suggest that God put the bones there to fool us. I don't think that's true. I believe they're real. They were real. Skeletons and stories from all over the world that we're going to touch on just a little while. Betsy and I and our kids visited the National Dinosaur Monument in Colorado and Utah in 2001. I have a couple pictures from that. It was so we camped and it was so blazing hot, I slept on top of the picnic table. But I can see my 12-year-old son walking in the little creek that run through the park, every now and then holding up a rock that looked like a triangle, absolutely convinced he'd found a dinosaur tooth. Fascinating area. I believe that dinosaurs were created on the fifth and sixth days of creation of Genesis chapter 1. That the sea creatures, the sea dragons, and the creatures on the earth, that God created them the same day He created man. So why doesn't the Bible mention dinosaurs? Well, first of all, it doesn't mention kangaroos or anteaters either, so I'm not too concerned about that, even though it may not name them. I believe they're there. We're going to see that in the next few moments. Another reason is the word dinosaur was invented about 1841 by Richard Owen. So any translations prior to that would not have been able to use the word dinosaur because it didn't exist. And so the early translations, particularly the King James, would not have used dinosaur. It comes from Greek words, meaning fearfully great, and the other lizard or reptile. Fearfully great reptiles. I wonder, is there going to be a time when translators today might have the boldness to translate some of these words in some places, dinosaur. And I fear the reason that most will not is because it will certainly go against the grain of common thinking about evolution and dinosaurs and humans. I think it does. The word dragons are found several times in the Old Testament. I'm coming over to Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse number 13. I'm going to work my way through these passages together with you. Interesting, and I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well, the dragon well. The old King James reads in that place that there was a well near Jerusalem that was given the name attached to dragons. In Isaiah 27, as I turn over there and read this one together with you, in Isaiah 27 and verse number 1. In that day the Lord with His severe sword, great and strong, will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, or the dragon. Leviathan, that twisted serpent, and I will slay the reptile that is in the sea. But there's a couple more, even a more impressive to me, and that's in Jeremiah 51. In Jeremiah 51 and verse number 34. Talking about Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon has devoured me, swallowed me. He has crushed me. He has swallowed me up like a monster. He has filled his stomach with my delicacies. This was a creature that would have been able to swallow a human being whole. And I think Jeremiah knew that as God asked him to record these words. In Ezekiel 29 and verse number 3, describing Pharaoh, Ezekiel 29 and verse number 3, he calls him, he says about him in verse 3, "Speak and say, thus says the Lord, behold, I'm against you, O Pharaoh, king of Egypt, O great monster who lives in the midst of his rivers, who has said, my river is my own, I have made it for myself. But I will put hooks in your jaws, God says, and cause the fish of your rivers to stick to your scales. I will bring you up out of the midst of your rivers, and all the fish in your rivers will stick to your scales." And he goes on. The Pharaoh was described as a great sea creature. And that's the words used in the New King James in Genesis 1:21 when speaking about certain creatures created by God in the water. This Hebrew word translated a marine or land monster, a sea serpent, a dragon, or a whale in some places. I'm turning now over to Job 41, and I want you to look at these two passages with me, what I think are the most convincing that God has spoken of dinosaurs in Scripture. I'm going to start with 41 and then come backwards into 40, because we just mentioned Leviathan. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? He challenges Job, and in this text, you remember, Job is being challenged by God. He's listened to Job long enough, and he's saying to Job, "Were you there when I created these things, including this creature?" Some have suggested, strangely to me, even Christians have suggested that the beast of chapter 40 and 41 are mythological, figurative creatures. Well, that's a strange thing to me, because we would not suggest that the animals God talks about right before these were mythical or figurative. These are real creatures that Job would have been able to see and know and look at. He says, "Look at them. Did you create them? Where did they come from? Who made them? And look at their power and their strength. Can you draw him out with a hook?" I thought the passage just says that somebody could draw him. God can, but man couldn't. "Or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications to you? Will he plead? Will he speak softly to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as a servant forever? Will you play with him as with a bird? They must have had pets back then too. Or will you lease him for your maidens? Will your companions make a banquet of him? Will they apportion him among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? You lay your hand on him, remember the battle, you would never do it again. Probably for two reasons. It may have been the last thing you ever did. Maybe just the recognition that this was impossible for a human to overpower. Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is vain. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? No one is so fierce that would dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand against me? He goes on and describes this creature a little bit more later. His rows of scales or his pride, they're set up tightly as with a seal, so one is near another that no air can come between them. They're joined one to another. They stick together. They cannot be parted. His sneezing flashes forth light. His eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning lights. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke goes out of his nostrils as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals and a flame goes out of his mouth. All right, wait a minute. An early precursor of Puff the Magic Dragon. A lot of people stop at this point and say, absolutely not. This cannot be real. We don't see any creatures capable of doing that today. And so therefore, we would have to consider this a myth. Well, these are very small in comparison. What about a lightning bug? I mean, God created that little creature to be able to shine light in the night. What about a bombardier beetle that can fire a boiling mixture 212 degrees Fahrenheit at its predators? What about an electric eel that can produce 600 volts enough to stun a horse? Those are small comparisons, but at least it lets us know that here's a creature that is extinct, and yet we would question whether this is true or not on the basis of this description. Why would we do that? By the way, there is a fossil crocodile that has been found. I don't think this describes a crocodile. Some have suggested that one as large as 40 feet long and weighing almost 9 tons. It took 4 men to lift the skull that was found in Kenya. And as those that were in this website said, we are surrounded by the remnants of the once great dinosaurs. Alligators and crocodiles today are the remnants of these great dinosaurs. I come back to chapter 40. Job 40 and verse 15. Look at the behemoth, which I made along with you. All right? This is the only time this word's found in the Hebrew, in the Old Testament. Only time. Now, there's a form of the word that's translated in other places, variety of ways, but it's the only time this word is found. So there's nothing to compare it to. He eats grass like an ox. Do you know that dinosaurs have been found with plant still fossilized in their stomachs? And you see his strength in his hips, his powers in his stomach muscles. You can see a T-Rex or some kind of a sauropod. He moves his tail like a cedar. This is not an elephant, and this is not a hippopotamus. Look it up, see what their tails look like. Not this creature. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs like the bars of iron. He is first or chief of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees in a covert of reeds and marsh. Let me ask you a question. When you read about dinosaurs in textbooks, what kind of environment did they put them in? I really doubt that the evolutionists read Job 40 and came up with this. But they put them in that kind of environment. Job was ahead of them. Job, by the way, is typically understood with that, some question that he wrote during the patriarchal days. The lotus trees cover him with their shade. The willows by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he's not disturbed. He's confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth, though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare. Could it be that these texts are describing creatures that we would recognize as being dinosaurs? However, so, speaking of dragons, let's quote Carl Sagan, the late Carl Sagan, a militant evolutionist, militant atheist. The pervasiveness of dragon myths and the folk legends of many cultures is probably no accident. It's a worldwide phenomenon. It's exactly right. Is it possible that dragons posed a problem for our postmodern ancestors of a few million years ago? They're more than they can even be numbered. Somebody numbered them over 200, I believe it was, but even more than that, some suggest. And that even if the stories had been found in culture after culture after culture, on every continent on the earth, even if the stories have been exaggerated and embellished, and it's very possible, we do that, humans are capable of doing that, but the question still remains, and Carl Sagan alludes to it, is there something true behind the legends? And even he suggests that surely they didn't just come up with this, that there was some reason for them to come up with these stories. Sometimes they're described as big reptiles with three clawed feet, theropods, fierce teeth. Chinese artifacts have been found with people riding dinosaurs. It's one of the creatures used on their calendar. Nobody questions whether any of the other creatures on the calendar are real, except that one. The dragons looked like dinosaurs. The Cambodian temple dated to the 12th century. If you can see in that picture, that's Mr. Don Patton standing there. I have no idea. He described a little bit of his being able to get to that spot, and he did with great danger, I think, to find this and to get there. I think this has been in some of the movies. Tomb Raider is one of those, perhaps. But anyway, in this tomb, there are several, on a column in a corner, several animals that are carved into this elaborate artwork. And one of them sure looks like a stegosaurus. And again, the question is, how were people drawing these things, and some have suggested this is anatomically correct, that possibly, and you know what Carl Sagan's answer to some of this was, by the way? We have stored memories. And so it was just put here genetically that we remember this is what they look like. This still raises a lot of questions for me. Fossils and dinosaurs, let's talk about it for just a little bit. And I present this evidence just simply to raise some questions about the dating of fossils and coming up with this idea that dinosaurs became extinct 65 million years ago, long before the human race existed. I'd like to talk about fossils. Fossils are created by being buried rapidly in sediment. Other minerals replace parts of the plants or animals that are buried. There's a Liskum bone bed in northern Alaska. Dinosaur bones have been found there, frozen and unfossilized after 65 million years, we're told. When you cut them, they smell like bone. I've cut a bone or two in building a guitar and having part of that on the fretboard. And that's what they smell like. There was an article in Newsweek magazine just a few years ago that pointed out that several fossilized dinosaur eggs have been found in Argentina. And the fossilized remains of unhatched embryos, including the first fossils of embryo skin ever seen by human eyes. I'll give you something to laugh about. I remember looking at that. If I've got a picture, I forgot to put it on here. But the skin reminded me of the leather of a basketball. Of course I would think that, you know. A dinosaur found in Mongolia's Gobi Desert sitting on a nest of eggs. Jack Horner, that I'm going to mention again in just a moment, a leading paleontologist, a student of dinosaurs and an atheist, considered it one of the two best specimens, I don't know what the other one is, of dinosaur fossils ever found because it revealed behavior. In the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, what are the odds of finding a fossilized dinosaur heart? The seemingly impossible is incurred within the 66-million-year-old skeleton, and the structure of the heart is surprisingly advanced. Hear that again, the seemingly impossible. And this was just in the last year. On a website called Live Science, popped up on Facebook, an impeccably preserved dinosaur embryo looks like it died yesterday. Why hasn't that fossilized? Why didn't it fossilize in 65 million years? It had plenty of time to do that. And I guess the most fascinating story, you can look this up, Mary Schweitzer became a student of Jack Horner, this evolutionist, student of dinosaurs, a study of dinosaurs. She wanted to get involved in the paleontology and the digs, and she first had to go into the laboratory, and they brought in a fresh, dug up dinosaur bone. She cut it. She immediately recognized that it smelled like cadavers that she had worked on in previous classes. And she just thought, well, wait a minute. And then she took slices of it, put it on a, you know, that little glass thing. And been too long since I've done that. And put it in a microscope and began looking at it. And she was shocked by what she saw. She took 17 samples to make sure because she couldn't believe that she was looking at soft, elastic tissue with red blood vessels and cells. One science magazine, blood cells in a dinosaur bone should have disappeared eons ago. I got goosebumps, this writer said. It was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone. The bones are, after all, 65 million years old. How could blood cells survive that long? Some of us have an answer to that, and I think it's because they're not that old. The curator of the Burke Museum of Natural History and Culture in Seattle, Washington, said this after Mary Schweitzer's finds in the early 2000s. He said, "This will either be nothing or the biggest revolution in paleontology ever." All right, the reason I give you any of that, science is always in a flux of some kind, and that's the way it should be as we research and study. And I appreciate the fact that when they read and study and dig something up and they look at it, and old conclusions are dismissed because this just doesn't fit the old hypotheses. Good for them, and we should be willing to do the same. In a Nova TV special called God, Darwin, and the Dinosaurs, this statement was made concerning dinosaur footprints that side by side with humans, finding them would counter evidence that humans evolved long after the dinosaurs became extinct and back up the claim that all species, including man, were created at one time. I heard Don Patton speak at the High School Road Lectures in 1991 and began to be interested in his search and his study of evidences in the natural world that point to God as creator. This is in the Palaxy River near Glen Rose. You can only see these when there's a drought. these theropod, three-toed, two-legged dinosaurs, footprints, were mentioned in a PBS special in May of 1997 as being authentic. No question, they would not question that these had been left there by dinosaurs. In another area, if you see this one on the right, I wish I had a better picture. But the trail going off at an angle is, again, less defined dinosaur tracks. Running across that are what appear to be a left-right, about 11 and a half inches long, about the length of my foot, footprints. One writer said, I think what that was those were dinosaur footprints, but before it hardened and it was covered by other sediment, there was mud and other things kind of fell into it and it made it look like human footprints. Okay. But it didn't do it to the other footprints. Why didn't it do it to the dinosaur footprints? I asked the question, how come this doesn't make national news? Well, it's probably pretty obvious. This kind of information isn't wanted to be known. These are some other pictures. Some of these had been previously cut out. These are not carvings that has been demonstrated. Again, a lot of extensive work was done to demonstrate that these were authentic footprints. The one on the right is rather fascinating, because you can see at the top the three tips of the toe of the dinosaur track, and inside of it appears to be, even with the indention of the toes, a human footprint. You can find most of this material at bible.ca. What about petroglyphs? Indian petroglyphs. In Montrose County in Colorado, Mr. Patton is standing next to an Indian petroglyph of Indians that go back at least 700 years and before, but what apparently looks like a triceratops. This is in Utah. And an evolutionist, having seen this, observed in 1979 that there's a petroglyph in Natural Bridges National Monument that bears a startling resemblance to a dinosaur, specifically a brontosaurus with a long tail and neck, small head, and all. He pointed out that all the other animals, such as ostriches and mammoths, that are seen on rock art panels in the Southwest, that either have been long extinct or were thought to have never been there before at all. It kind of blows it up and kind of pulls it out a little bit and accentuates the picture. It's a possibility, some have suggested, that the Indians were just as smart as we are. In fact, I would suggest sometimes smarter. That what they did was the same thing we do, is that they had found bones and reconstructed them and then come up in their own mind what they might have looked like if you fleshed them out. Some have suggested the study of paleontology has not been around all of that long, and so would the Indians have been thinking in those terms? We don't really know. But I suggest to you that all of these point to the idea that Indians knew what these creatures look like, because either they or some of their close ancestors had seen them. These are burial stones found in the Inca culture in South America. When you look at some of these, you can see the dinosaurs on these burial stones. There's a triceratops. There's some brontosaurus. Seismosauruses, perhaps. This was a burial cloth. Well, that's rather crude, but still raises a question about how did they know about these creatures. In 1945, there was an amazing find in the foot of El Toro Mountain in Mexico, where a man uncovered 33,000 artifacts. Some of these were sent off to a lab to be dated. They were dated to be exactly about this time in which this culture existed, lived, and thrived. And apparently when they found out where the specimens came from, they retracted their information, their conclusions. There's several of these. And they look a whole lot like the dinosaurs in textbooks today. They even tried to pin this on somebody outside of the town who had been making them recently. And again, I'll give you an 18-page article if you want it. Where a lot of research was done to demonstrate time and again there wasn't anybody making these. They had been buried. There were some of them buried 6 feet under the surface of the ground. They'd been there for all of these years. How did they know? These are my favorites. This is Flintstones. There's a guy riding a triceratops, and there's one, my favorite of all of these, it's this one. Give him a big hug before he went to bed. Did man and dinosaur live together over 2,000 years ago? It's a real possibility. Living dinosaurs. Now, that's not an animal. I know that. You're going, Lee, you've lost your mind, but that's possible. But in this study, I heard about the Wallamy pine in Australia, one of the world's oldest and rarest plants dating back to the time of dinosaurs, known only in fossils until 1994, and someone was hiking in this wilderness area in Australia and came upon this grove of trees, and to their surprise, and a Washington Post writer said about this in 2020, he called these trees living dinosaurs. So before anybody just runs out and says, well, you know, they're just these kind of things aren't around anymore, I'll give you a clip or the address of a video that you can watch that raises some interesting questions about creatures still around today. In 1938, some fishermen were fishing in the Indian Ocean off Madagascar, and they caught a coelaconth that at that point believed was extinct about the same time as dinosaurs. Fossils found in the same strata as dinosaurs. One evolutionist said that he could not have been more surprised if he had come across a living dinosaur. And by the way, that coelaconth is ugly a fish as I've ever seen. I don't know if it tastes any good or not. Looks just like the fossils that are supposed to be 65 million years ago. Wait a minute. I find a fossil 65 million years ago and then I catch the thing and it looks like that. All this idea that time involved and things evolving and changing. Things like that raise a question. All right, I'm going to touch about two things and then bring the lesson to a close. Archaeopteryx, what in the world is that? Is that a dinosaur? Is it a bird? Is it a transitional fossil? Is it some creature that's not around anymore that was going from a dinosaur, it was evolving from a dinosaur into a bird? I wouldn't even put this up here. There were 6 of these found in a quarry in Germany. One of them was found almost about the time that Darwin's The Origin of the Species came out in the 1860s. Darwin acknowledged himself that the fossil record did not support his theory, and years later Stephen Gould said the same thing, that it did not. And yet the motivation for looking for these transitional fossils, these links between species, is Well, they're just trying to find something that would give them the ties between these creatures that they're looking for and prove that evolution is the reason that these creatures came to be. I think the reason I put this in there was just for this fun. This goes back to our days with our kids. We were in a Burger King. They had one of these kids' meals. It's called a kids' club. There was a card in the meal that said, and I quote, there it is, Archaeopteryx was the first bird. And I thought, I can't even go to Burger King and not have my kids being confronted with this kind of information. By studying fossils, scientists discovered that birds are related to dinosaurs. Lego magazine. Now, come on. You know, stay with Legos, leave science to somebody else. If you look into the evidence squarely in the face, there's no question that birds evolved from theropods, two-legged meat-eating dinosaurs. Slow down. Wait a minute. That was made a statement made by a professor at the University of Chicago in a Newsweek magazine article in May of 2000. An Alan Fiducia, an ornithologist, don't ask me to say that again, someone who studies birds, said that Archaeopteryx was in the modern sense a bird. A Yale University study simply said, and I won't read all of this, that the idea of birds descending from dinosaurs is utter nonsense. So I read those things to say, you know, before you read something and say, well, science says this, time out. Maybe not. In the Newsweek article in July of 2000, the title of the article was Ruffling Some Old Feathers, A Fossil May Cast Doubt on the Dinosaur Bird Theory. I think there's plenty of reason to doubt it. I don't want to have too much fun. I want to be serious, but allow me for a moment. That if birds came from dinosaurs, does that mean that chickens came from dinosaurs? It answers the age-old question of what did dinosaurs taste like? Like chicken. What happened to them? I don't know. One scientist said we just don't know. Some have suggested the climate was different after the flood. There was an ice age. A number of things have been involved. There are other animals that become extinct. And so it's not surprising. We don't know the answers to that. I love this quote, though. This is from Mr. Horner that I mentioned earlier. This didn't kill all of them, because we'll talk about that just briefly for a moment. But in Utah, one dig, he said there were 30 million fossil fragments in that area. At a conservative estimate, we had discovered the tomb of 10,000 dinosaurs. There was a flood. There was no ordinary spring flood from one of the streams in the area, but a catastrophic inundation. That's our best explanation. It seems to make the most sense. And on the basis of it, we believe that this was a living, breathing group of dinosaurs destroyed in one catastrophic moment. Amen. I think we know when that might have been. Well, we made our first venture to Kentucky a couple weeks ago. When Stan and Jan were here, they wanted to go see the Ark Encounter. And so we did that. It was interesting. Changed my, helped a perspective perhaps. And of course, there's a lot of information in there. We didn't go to the Creation Museum as well. But some information about could they have had dinosaurs on the Ark. You got over 1.5 million cubic feet of storage space. I forgot, I didn't write it down, how many semi-loads you could have gotten in there, and it was several. One thing I read once was 520 railroad boxcars, the old big boxcars. Some have suggested that you could have taken non-adult animals. That's a possibility. You took smaller dinosaurs on the Ark. Dinosaur eggs indicate that a 40-foot-long dinosaur laid eggs that were less than a foot in diameter. Did they take eggs? And that would raise some questions, but that's, you know, there's some reasonable attempts to answer the question of whether there were dinosaurs on the Ark, and I believe very likely there were, unless God was done with them, and that they were not some of the species that were brought on the Ark. All right, so what? So what? Interesting to think about. Well, I'll just ask two things to you. Mike Job, it may be time for us to put our hands over our mouth and stop questioning God so much. And stop challenging God, the God who created these great land sea creatures. And some of the questions we don't know, like all of the whys, that Job wanted to know why these things had happened to him. And sometimes we just need to look at the world that God has created and its remarkable complexity. That's another sermon, by the way, about irreducible complexity in our world. The smaller we have gotten, the more amazed we are with what God has created. Are we going to bow before Him in all reverence? That's my goal. My goal is to help young people, our children, and others to realize that there are reasonable answers to some of these questions. But the reason why any of this is important is so that we do not do what Romans 1:20 tells us. We begin to worship the creature. We worship ourselves and our own wisdom and knowledge and realize that some of the answers may be rather simple and that there are answers out there that can help us to not have our faith shaken by these great, stupid beasts that Derek Ager called them as they walk by. And the question is, then, are we ready to submit to the one who created these creatures? But on a bigger and a grander scale, God became one of us. He did not become an animal. He did not become a dinosaur. He did not become any animal. He became a person. Because we have been created specially by God with a grand purpose of bowing before Him. When we refused to do that, He sent His Son into the world and He allowed Him to die on a cross. And thankfully, the third day raised Him from the grave to demonstrate that there is life eternal, that there is hope, and that in doing that in Philippians 2, that He has given us reason to bow to Him in obedience. If He would be that obedient to His Father, He's calling us to be obedient to that same Father as we should be. There's a God up there who loves us, who loves you, and is calling you to come to Him. Do you believe in God? Do you believe in Jesus? Do you believe the story? Do you believe God created you? Do you believe that you failed? I failed, we all sinned, and that He sent the only remedy, and that was His Son to die for our sins. Are you ready to submit to Him? Fall before Him? Say to Him, "You are God. I certainly am not, and I'm ready to listen to You." He's there ready to receive us and accept us. Come as we stand and sing.